Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Cash and Carry Kitchens. Transform your home with the warmth of an Irish-made kitchen. Cashandcarrykitchens.ie.
Email todaycb at rte.ie.
Now, if you have young children, do you know how they would be taken care of legally and financially if you or your partner died prematurely? And I know that so many of you will shudder when you imagine that scenario, but it's precisely that fear that puts us off making plans. And while making a will is important, it's an important thing to do at any age, it's even more important if you've children under the age of 18. Andrea McNamara is back with us now, Head of Private Client Law at EY Law. And Andrea, I was saying to you when you came in, nobody wants to think about this, we don't want to face it, but really we should.
We really should. And, you know, I completely empathise with people. It's a situation nobody wants to dream of. I would say statistically, thankfully, it is very unlikely that both parents would die while their children are young. But we all know cases where it does happen. And if it happens, you want to have that security in place that you know there's a proper structure there to look after your children.
So what should we be doing? If we were doing the right thing and you have children under the age of 18, what are the steps you should be taking?
The first step would be talk to your solicitor and put a will in place. And then I suppose you get into the detail of what should that will include? What's the structure of that will? The most important thing from a parental perspective, I would say, is the appointment of guardians. So under your will, you should be appointing one or more individuals to act as guardians of your minor children. So they'd be responsible for raising your children in the event of the death of the parents. And that's the really important decision for people, because they're the people who are going to raise your children and they'll be responsible for their moral upbringing. And it's something I see all the time, not just with clients, but also, you know, in my own circle with family and friends. The decision of who would be responsible for your children's upbringing can be so great that sometimes it can actually deter people putting their will in place because they just can't decide. Mm-hmm. But I would say that really you should make some decision, put somebody down in your will as your children's guardians. You can always change it. You can change your will next month. You can change it next year. Mm-hmm. But it's much better to have somebody there than nobody at all.
Because if you don't make that stipulation, and if the worst happens, who then decides who the guardians of the children are?
Court. So you'll have a judge making that decision who doesn't know your children. Now, obviously, they will receive reports and they'll be, you know, looking out for your children and trying to make the decision in their best interests. But ultimately, it's somebody who doesn't know your family. So in my view, it's much better for you to have that autonomy and you to make that decision in your will and appoint someone. And as I said, it's not, you know, it can change at any stage. So it's much better to do it, put something down for now. You can always revisit it in time.
OK, so that is step one,
yes,
to make that decision and go to your solicitor and have a chat about that. Anything else you think people should be aware of that they should be doing?
The other main aspect of making a will for young children that I would recommend people consider is how you want to structure their inheritance. So would you be happy for your children to receive their share of your estate when they turn 18? And to be honest, I've yet to meet a client who says yes to that, because, you know, even if you think, even if it was €100,000 or it's €1 million, €100,000 could be a life-changing sum for an 18-year-old. I think I probably wouldn't have been trusted, you know, with €100,000 when I was 18. So it's structuring the inheritance to make sure that if you're not comfortable with them getting assets at 18, that can be postponed. And how you would do that is by putting a trust in your will. And there are different types of trusts, but the trust that I would recommend in this situation is what's called a discretionary trust, which we've discussed before in the context of providing for children with additional needs. And this is another situation where this type of trust works really well to provide for minor children, because I suppose the main benefit that you get from it, again, from a parental perspective, is that it pushes out your children's inheritance past the age of 18 until the children are sufficiently mature to receive their inheritance. And the trustees, who are the people that you appoint under your will to manage this trust fund, they get to make that decision as to when the children are mature enough. So it means they can assess your children's circumstances, they can see how they're getting on in life and start making distributions to them that are appropriate at that stage of the children's
life.
And
the alternative to that discretionary trust is a fixed trust.
Yes, a fixed trust is another type of trust that's commonly used across the country to provide for young children. In my view, it's not the best structure to provide for young children for a couple of reasons. The first reason being that there's a complete lack of flexibility with a fixed trust. So in contrast to the discretionary trust that I just mentioned, with a fixed trust, the trustees have no discretion as to when they make distributions to the children. So we might, you know, fixed trusts are quite common. A lot of people might be familiar with them. It's where a will might say that they leave, say parents leave their estate to their children Say if there are two children, they leave half of the estate to each of their children when they reach a specified age. So it might say 23 or 25 years. And then when that child turns 23 or 25, the trustees have to appoint their half share out to them. And they've no flexibility to do anything other than that. So if, for example, a child had developed an addiction, and if the parents were around, they wouldn't want that child to get their half share at age 23 or 25. Or if a child had an accident and they lost capacity and couldn't manage their share of the estate, again, it wouldn't be appropriate for them to get it. But the trustees with a fixed trust have no discretion to vary the terms of the trust.
OK, they have to go with what's set
they
down
do.
In that.
Yeah.
Now, I have a question here, which is really interesting. Do you have to ask permission to put someone down as a guardian? I mean, in this context, the question is asked because the listener has a child with severe special needs. We don't feel there's anyone we could ask to take on that burden. But in general terms, do you have to ask?
You don't, is the simple answer. But I would generally say that it is recommended to speak to whoever you're considering appointing, whether it's as guardians or trustees of a trust fund, because I suppose you don't want to appoint someone who will then turn around when you pass away and say, no, I'm not acting. And then you're left in a situation where you don't have someone. And again, the court would have to intervene. So it is best to speak to somebody and, you know, see that they will act. But I suppose the flip side of that is, again, you can change your mind at any stage and you can change your will and change the people that you're appointing. So I wouldn't divulge too much information, but I do think it's a good idea to speak with people and make sure that they'll act.
So we've spoken about providing for your child when they reach the age of 18 and beyond, but you'll want to put provisions in there for your child as they are growing up, as they are children reaching adulthood. So how do you do that?
The trust would cater for all of that.
Okay.
So the trustees essentially step into the parents' shoes and they manage the trust fund following the parents' death.
Mm-hmm.
So the trust fund could be all of the assets in the parents' estate. So while the children are in school and while they're young, they'll pay for all of their living expenses. They'll pay for any care needs, any medical needs, all educational expenses. So everything will be paid for out of the trust. What I was talking about a moment ago in terms of making distributions to the children is more distributing the capital inheritance at a later stage. But all living expenses would absolutely be paid for out of the trust.
OK, well, we get to some questions because
we
always get so many and they're very broad. So let's get to some of them. This listener asks, if you know you're named as an executor of your parents' estate, is it rude to ask them while they're still alive for a list of their assets and their bank accounts, etc.? How best do you start that conversation without sounding mercenary?
Yes, so I suppose a bit of a tricky one, and probably everybody knows their family best. So, you know, it is personal to each family as to whether those kind of conversations can be open or not. But I would say the children probably don't need to have a list of the assets now if they're named as executor, because the parents could buy and sell assets. Hopefully they'll spend a lot in their retirement and enjoy their life. So the assets that they have now might not be the same as the assets that they have at date of death. But what I would always recommend is that people, along with doing their wills, they should keep just a broad spreadsheet of their assets so that they have, you know, kind of bank accounts in AIB. I have a life insurance policy with Zurich. So there's a broad overview, because that can be really helpful for executors when it comes to administering an estate, because they have a starting point. So they know, OK, these are the assets that, in this case, my parents held. So we'll contact these institutions and we'll get details of the assets and start administering the estate.
OK, but you can't really advise on whether to have that conversation or not.
I think it's probably tricky. It's not necessary to ask for the assets now, but I think they could open the conversation and say to the parents, will you take a list of your assets? Keep it somewhere and let me know where that list is so that we can access it when you do pass away.
That might be an easier way to do it. Now, a probate question for Andrea from this listener. The administrator, who is a sibling of our father's estate, he died intestate, has failed to administer the estate since their appointment 6 years ago. They say for no good reason. The administrator lives in the UK. The remaining siblings are in Ireland. The administrator refuses to step down, to resign, to hand the estate over. They won't communicate. They won't take any steps to, for example, sell the property which now lie empty. They won't share the estate accounts which were prepared by the estate solicitor. Can we take steps to have them removed?
That's a very tricky situation, but it sounds as though that administrator is certainly in breach of their duties. If they're letting properties lie empty, you know, is there insurance on those properties? Could they be yielding rent that could add value to the estate? So the short answer, I suppose, is that the beneficiary certainly could bring an action again to have that administrator removed. Now, if the administrator is completely disengaging and they won't deal with them at all, then they're likely going to have to go to court, but they should definitely speak with the solicitor. about bringing proceedings to have that administration
removed.
But
enough time has passed now for them to do that.
So there isn't a strict time limit within which estates have to be administered. The one rule that we do have is that for the first year, there's kind of a grace period after a death. But once a year has expired from the date of death, after that time, anyone, a beneficiary, could bring an action against an executor for claiming that they're failing to administer an estate. So certainly here, if it was 6 years, they could absolutely do that.
Okay, so they can take some action on that.
They could.
That's what they decide to do. Next one, my husband and I are both in our 70s. We worry that if something were to happen to us, what can we do to make sure our son can make decisions regarding paying bills, etc. We've looked at the new decision support service for enduring power of attorney. We think it's all too complex. So I wonder, could we have our son's name added to our account so he could make sure of everything, that everything is paid on time? His name is already on our Visa account, but if we could add it to our current account, it would be a big relief to us. What do you think?
So I suppose if they added their son's name to their current account, there's a couple of different ways you can add somebody's name to your account. If this is just for convenience purposes, it means the parents still own the account and the son is just listed on the bank mandate for convenience. Then if the parents lose capacity, the account is still an account of the parents, so that would be frozen. So the son actually shouldn't be able to still use the account. Sometimes things do slip through the cracks, and I am aware of situations where, say, in a case like that, the son might still continue to use the account. But from a strict legal perspective, he wouldn't have legal authority to do that. So even for himself, he wouldn't be protected if, say, there were other children and they said, you know, if somebody claimed that he didn't have the authority to do that, mm-hmm. and they didn't agree with what he was doing.
It's still their account.
It is. And yeah. he wouldn't have any protection. So it wouldn't, you know, he could be exposed there. So unfortunately, really, the best way for them to proceed would be to put an enduring power of attorney in place. But look, I am aware that there are difficulties with the system now, and you know, it is more complex than it used to
be. This is the new decision support service that they said they have said it's too complex for them.
Yes, there's new legislation in relation to enduring powers of attorney, and the way that they're now put in place, the procedure has changed, and it is a more complex procedure now, and it's done through the decision support service, which is a new state body overseeing.
Okay, and is there any work being done on that to make it more accessible? Is there a general acceptance that it might be difficult to navigate?
There is a general acceptance, certainly among the legal profession, and there are ongoing discussions, I understand, between various legal bodies, including the Law Society and the Decision Support Service. But it's been 18 months now since the legislation has been introduced, and we don't have any significant changes to date. So it's kind of a watch this space.
Okay, well, that's the difficult answer for that family. They may have to try and navigate that system. Probably it sounds as though they'll need some help to do that. Andrea, we'll leave it there for now, but hopefully you'll be back with us again to take more of those questions, which are flying in as they always do when Andrea is with us. And Andrea is head of private client law at EY Law.